Welcome, everyone. So glad you're joining us for another deep dive. We're here to, unpack complex ideas and get right to the surprising insights. I'm Pat.
And I'm Jesse.
Today, we're peeling back the layers on something almost universally experienced, yet often deeply misunderstood. Anxiety. Mm. That feeling.
Yeah, that tightening in your chest, maybe the racing thoughts, those endless what-ifs.
Definitely.
But here's where our deep dive gets, well, really fascinating today. We're going to explore anxiety not just as this burden, but actually as a fundamental built-in defense mechanism.
Something designed to keep us safe.
Exactly. So our mission today is really to show you the surprising science behind this feeling, understand why it sometimes goes from helpful to harmful.
Which is key.
And most importantly, what you can actually do to manage it. We've pulled together, recent research, academic papers, and some deep psychological insights.
All to give you a fresh perspective. So get ready to maybe reframe how you think about those uneasy feelings, understand their powerful roots, and hopefully discover some tools to navigate them more effectively.
Right. So when we usually talk about anxiety, it's often framed in this negative light, isn't it? This unpleasant state of inner turmoil.
Yeah, like dread.
Yeah, dread over things that might happen in the future, or just a general like uneasiness and worry.
Mm-hmm.
But if we really connect this to the bigger picture, it's way more than just a bad feeling. It's actually distinct from fear.
Ah, okay. So fear is
what?
The immediate thing.
Exactly. Fear is your response to an immediate present threat. If a car suddenly swerves into your lane right now, that's fear.
Gotcha. That sudden alarm bell, the primal run or freeze.
Precisely. But anxiety, mm-hmm. That's different. That's the long-acting kind of diffuse anticipation of a future threat.
Okay, so it's less about the car swerving now and more about working about the possibility of a car swerving later.
You got it. It's the feeling that makes you, say, triple-check your presentation slides the night before.
Or meticulously plan your finances for next year, just in case.
Exactly. It's like this constant, maybe low-level hum of caution in the background.
What's truly fascinating, though, is that this worry, this apprehension, it actually serves a really profound evolutionary purpose, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And, this raises a pretty important question.
Which is?
Why on earth would our bodies and minds evolve to feel something so inherently unpleasant? It doesn't immediately make sense.
Why? It seems like a flaw.
But the research strongly suggests the opposite, that increased anxiety actually boosts our vigilance against potential threats.
Okay, vigilance, like being more aware.
Exactly. More aware, more watchful, and it prompts us to take proactive steps. For instance, there was this one study suggesting that highly anxious people might actually be less likely to die from accidents.
Wow, really? How does that work?
Well, think about it. If you're someone who constantly runs through worst-case scenarios,
you're probably more careful.
Precisely. You're more likely to double check that the stove is off or look both ways maybe twice before crossing the street or, avoid situations that seem risky in the first place.
So it's like a built-in early warning system.
That's a great way to put it. It nudges us towards caution and preparation.
Mm.
And back in a more primal world, that caution could literally save your life from, say, a hidden predator or noticing an impending storm.
Okay, that makes evolutionary sense. So how does this incredible internal warning system actually work?
Let's unpack the biology a bit.
Yeah, let's do it. Our bodies have this amazing automatic defense system. It's known as the fight, flight, or freeze response.
Right, I've heard of that. It's wired deep inside us.
Super deep into our sort of reptilian brain. It's designed to protect us instantly when we perceive a threat.
And that threat could be anything. Physical, emotional.
Absolutely. Physical danger, emotional stress, even social threats. It's all about survival at its core.
And it happens fast. Incredibly fast. So when you encounter something, your brain flags as a threat. Could be a loud noise, a sudden movement, maybe even just a stressful email.
Okay.
A tiny kind of almond-shaped part of your brain, the amygdala, it instantly goes off like an alarm bell.
The amygdala, got it.
It sends a distress signal straight to your hypothalamus.
Think of the hypothalamus as the command center.
Command center. Okay. What is the command?
Kicks your autonomic nervous system, or ANS, into high gear. And the ANS controls all those automatic bodily functions, breathing, heart rate, digestion, stuff you don't consciously think about.
Right. And the ANS has two parts, doesn't it?
Exactly. Two key players.
Yeah.
First, there's the sympathetic nervous system. That's like the gas pedal for this response.
Gas pedal. Go, go, go.
Pretty much. It screams, danger. and signals your adrenal glands to just flood your system with stress hormones.
Like cortisol and adrenaline.
The big ones, yeah. Cortisol and adrenaline. And what happens next is this rapid, really dramatic change in your body, all designed for immediate action.
So what does that feel like? Well, your heart rate skyrockets. It's pushing blood and oxygen to your big muscle groups, getting you ready to either fight back or run away.
Fight or flight.
Hmm. Your breathing quickens, bringing in more oxygen. Your senses actually sharpen, zeroing in on the perceived threat. Everything else kind of fades out.
Wow.
You might feel a surge of heat or start sweating. That's your body trying to cool itself down because it's preparing for major exertion.
And that explains the butterflies, that weird feeling in your stomach.
Totally. It's also why you might feel nauseous. Blood is being diverted away from non-essential functions like digestion.
Because digesting lunch isn't helpful if you're running from a tiger.
Exactly. It's all about fueling those essential escape or defense mechanisms.
Okay, so that's the gas pedal. What's the other part?
Right.
The brake.
Right. Then there's the parasympathetic nervous system that acts like the brake. Its main job is to help your body calm down once the perceived threat has passed, bring everything back to balance.
Rest and digest mode.
You got it. But it also has this sort of emergency brake function.
Oh, what's that?
That triggers the freeze response.
Yeah.
In situations of really extreme danger where fighting or fleeing might not work.
Like playing dead.
Kind of. Your heart rate and breathing can slow down dramatically. Your body movement might just completely stop. The idea is to avoid detection, become invisible, or maybe signal non-aggression.
Wow. So fight, flight, or freeze.
Yes. Huh. So whether it's fighting back, running for safety, or just becoming unseen, this whole system is this remarkably powerful and efficient survival mechanism evolved over millennia just to keep us alive.
That makes so much sense when you break it down like that. It's actually quite brilliant.
It is, isn't it?
But, okay, if anxiety is designed to protect us, what happens when this, you know, perfectly evolved system starts misfiring? How do we know when it's stopped being a shield and maybe started becoming a burden?
Yeah, and that's the crucial shift, isn't it? The downside of our brilliantly efficient survival brain is that it can definitely overreact.
Overreact? How so?
Because it's designed for these instant life or death reactions, it often struggles to tell the difference between a truly life-threatening situation, you know, the tiger jumping out,
right,
and something that's just stressful but ultimately harmless, like a tight deadline at work or maybe a tricky social situation.
So your body reacts the same way to the deadline as it would to the tiger.
Sometimes, yeah. It means your body can go into full fight, flight, or freeze mode even when there's no actual physical danger present. The system gets triggered inappropriately.
And we see this play out in so many everyday ways, don't we? I mean, you can probably think of examples.
Absolutely. Think about maybe snapping at a loved one over a really minor misunderstanding.
Because your system interprets that disagreement as a threat.
It can, yeah. Or think about how your mind can just go completely blank during a presentation at work.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst.
That's a perfect example of the freeze response kicking in. Your brain perceives the social situation as a threat, and boom, blank slate.
Or maybe finding yourself constantly avoiding certain places or situations.
Mm-hmm. The flight response. Even when those places are perfectly safe, you avoid them simply because they might cause discomfort or anxiety.
So these aren't just like minor annoyances.
Not at all. They're really common examples of how that finely tuned defense mechanism can lead to overwhelming anxiety, sometimes anger outbursts, and just significant stress in our daily lives.
Even when our actual survival isn't on the line.
Exactly. And when that anxiety becomes really strong, or when it persists, like most of the time without an obvious reason.
Or when it starts getting in the way of things.
Yes. When it starts to actively interfere with your daily life, maybe stopping you from doing things you enjoy, making it hard to concentrate, even straining your relationships.
That's when it's crossing a line.
That's generally when it crosses the line into being a potential anxiety disorder. It can show up as constant, pervasive worry, maybe feeling restless all the time, irritability, chronic fatigue.
And physical symptoms, too.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Things like persistent muscle tension, stomach issues, headaches, even heart palpitations can be part of it.
And the research is pretty clear, right? If this goes unaddressed.
Yeah, the research shows that chronic anxiety, if left untreated, can contribute to or even worsen other serious mental health conditions, like depression. And it can impact physical health over the long term, too.
So, okay, why then? Why do some people seem to experience this overreaction more intensely or more persistently than others? This raises another important question, doesn't it?
It really does. And anxiety disorders, as the research clearly shows, they aren't simple. It's not just one thing. They're complex. Think of it like a tangled web stemming from a combination of factors.
Biological, psychological.
Exactly. Biological, psychological, environmental, and social factors all interacting. It's rarely just one single cause.
Okay, let's break that down. Biological, what does that mean? Genetics.
Yeah, genetics plays a big part. There's a strong genetic component. Twin studies have really highlighted this, suggesting a pretty significant genetic influence on anxiety.
So it can run in families?
It can. Estimates often range, you know, maybe 25 to 40% heritability, depending on the specific type of anxiety in the age group. But it's not just genes.
Brain chemistry, too.
Our brain chemistry plays a crucial role. Things like imbalances in neurotransmitters. You've probably heard of serotonin and norepinephrine.
Yeah.
Imbalances there. Or maybe dysregulation in specific brain regions that process fear, like the amygdala we talked about in the prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
That can make someone more predisposed.
Okay, that's the biology. What about the psychological side?
Well, how we think deeply influences our anxiety. Cognitive distortions are a huge factor here.
What are those? Like negative thinking patterns?
Exactly. Things like catastrophizing, always jumping to the absolute worst case scenario.
If I fail this test, my life is over.
Right. Or overestimating danger in situations that are relatively safe. These thought patterns can significantly fuel anxiety.
And behaviorally, can it be learned?
Absolutely. It's often learned if we consistently avoid situations that make us anxious.
We never learn that we can handle them.
Precisely. We actually reinforce that anxious pattern, making it even harder to confront the situation next time. Avoidance feeds anxiety.
Makes sense. And environmentally, things happening around us.
Definitely. Things like significant chronic stress, job stress, financial worries, relationship problems. Also, traumatic experiences, whether recent or past.
And early life stuff. Childhood.
Yeah, early life adversities like growing up in a chaotic environment or certain parenting styles can absolutely trigger or exacerbate anxiety disorders later on.
Okay, and then there's the social piece.
Right. We can't forget the social context. Factors like, say, a history of bullying or even broader societal pressures and expectations can increase vulnerability.
That's interesting.
And what's really fascinating from a social perspective is that research also indicates cultural factors can profoundly influence things.
How so?
Not just how people experience anxiety, but also how they express it, how they communicate it. What's considered normal varies across cultures.
Huh. And I think I read something about gender differences, too.
Yeah, there's research on that. Some studies suggest that things like gender socialization, how boys and girls are raised differently, along with maybe traits like self-confidence or a sense of personal control, might help explain why anxiety levels often appear higher in women compared to men.
They appear higher?
Well, yeah, reported rates are often higher, but the actual prevalence and how it manifests can vary significantly based on a whole host of factors.
Yeah.
It's a really complex, multifaceted landscape.
It really is. It's never just one thing, is it?
Rarely, if ever.
Right. Okay, if we connect all this back to the bigger picture, the really good news, I think, is that there are so many effective, scientifically backed ways to manage anxiety.
Absolutely. And to build resilience.
Resilience. What does that mean exactly in this context?
Resilience, simply put, is your ability to bounce back from adversity, to not just cope with misfortune, but to actually thrive despite it.
Okay, bouncing back.
Yeah. And studies, like one I saw among university students, show this really powerful inverse relationship. The higher your measured resilience, the lower your reported test anxiety.
Wow. So building resilience directly helps with anxiety.
It strongly suggests that yes, by consciously building your capacity to cope with stress, you can directly, tangibly impact your anxiety levels.
That's incredibly hopeful. So, okay, what does this all mean for practical steps? What can people actually do?
Well, one of the most widely researched and effective approaches is cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
Right, CBT. I've heard a lot about that. How does it work for anxiety?
It's generally a structured, often time-limited form of therapy. It helps you actively identify and then challenge those negative or distorted thought patterns that are fueling your anxiety.
So noticing the catastrophizing we talked about.
Exactly. Noticing it, questioning it, reality testing it. Techniques include meticulously identifying your specific triggers, what sets off the anxiety.
Okay.
Then actively reframing those negative thoughts into more balanced, realistic ones. And a big part is often gradually confronting your fears.
Facing the things you avoid, isn't that scary?
It can be,
yeah.
But it's done systematically and safely through a process often called exposure therapy. You might work your way up an anxiety hierarchy.
Like starting small.
Exactly. Starting with situations that cause less fear and slowly, with support, moving towards the more intense ones, learning you can cope along the way.
Okay, so therapy like CBT is a major tool. What about things people can do on their own, like right now?
Oh, definitely. Beyond formal therapy, there are incredibly powerful, simple, and scientifically proven techniques you can use anytime to help calm that overactive survival brain.
Like what?
Diaphragmatic breathing, often just called belly breathing, is an absolute game changer.
Just breathing? How does that help so much?
It's about physiology. Taking slow, deep breaths, really letting your belly rise as you inhale, and then exhaling slowly and fully. That directly activates your parasympathetic nervous system.
The brake system we talked about earlier.
Exactly. It physically shifts you out of that fight or flight survival mode and back into a calmer thinking mode. It literally calms your body down.
How long do you need to do it for?
Researchers have found that even just 1 minute of this kind of slow, deep breathing can significantly reduce your body's acute stress response. It's that powerful.
No, just 1 minute. Okay, what else?
Other really impactful strategies include regular physical activity. Countless studies show exercise significantly reduces anxiety symptoms.
How does exercise help? Burning off stress?
Yeah, likely by burning off excess stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, and also by releasing endorphins, which are natural mood boosters.
Makes sense. Get moving.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, something as simple as connecting and talking with a trusted person.
Just talking.
Yeah. Whether it's a friend, a family member, a therapist, a support group, just talking things through can be profoundly helpful.
Oh.
It helps you gain perspective, maybe think more clearly when you're feeling overwhelmed, and feel less alone. It helps you feel a greater sense of control over that automatic fight, flight, or freeze response.
So breathing, exercise, yeah. Talking, these are accessible tools.
Very accessible. Now, of course, there are also medications like SSRIs and SNRIs and some complementary therapies that can be part of a management plan for some people.
But that's something to discuss with a doctor.
Absolutely. Always consult a healthcare professional for personalized advice and treatment options.
Yeah.
There's no one-size-fits-all approach.
Well, for now, I think that's our deep dive into anxiety. It's been really insightful, actually.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed connecting and sharing these thoughts with you all.
We truly hope that something we've discussed today has resonated with you. Maybe offered a little moment of clarity, perhaps?
Or just a gentle sense of understanding about anxiety's surprising purpose. And maybe some ideas on how to navigate its challenges.
And as you reflect on this, maybe consider this thought. If anxiety really is kind of a warning system, what might it be trying to tell you that maybe you haven't quite heard yet? Perhaps it's not just a signal of danger, but maybe an invitation.
An invitation to what?
To cultivate greater self-awareness, maybe? Or to develop new coping skills, or perhaps even to reevaluate your boundaries or priorities, something to think about.
That's a great point. A powerful reframe.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive.
We really, really hope you'll come back again next time for another one.
And hey, if you found something meaningful or helpful in our conversation today, please remember to like, share, or leave us a comment.
It genuinely helps us connect with more people, and we love hearing from you.
It really does.
So, until next time, host, speaker, and expert speaker, goodbye, everyone.